One of the hits.
Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple grammar and a limited vocabulary. Today on the show, Alice Bryant brings us Ask a Teacher. She answers a question about two words that are hard to tell apart. Later, we have our program, American Stories. We hear part two of The Blue Hotel by Stephen Crane. But first, Gregory Stockel and I bring you this story. Traditional wooden boats, known as kaiki or kaiki, are an important part of Greek culture. They have been used for centuries to fish and to transport goods, animals, and people. They are seen everywhere in printed materials for visitors and holiday pictures. But the art of designing and building these wooden boats completely by hand is under threat. To build a kaiki, one person has to do all the work from cutting down trees and moving the wood to securing each piece in place. The tradition is passed on from father to son or from one family member to another. Now, fewer people are ordering wooden boats since boats made from materials like plastic and fiberglass are less costly to maintain. And young people are not as interested in joining a profession that requires years of learning with an uncertain future. Yorgos Kiasos is one of the last remaining boat builders on the Greek island Samos. It was once a major boat production center. Kiasos is currently building two boats, one for pleasure and the other for fishing. While working, he said, "If something doesn't change, there will come a time when there won't be anyone left doing this type of job. Unfortunately, I see the profession slowly dying," he added. The boats are being made to order. The bigger one costs $70,000, and the smaller one is around $35,000. Kaikis from Samos Island are famous for both the quality of the work and the material. The wood is taken from a kind of pine tree that is stronger and more resistant to insects. Years ago, there were many boat building centers on the island. They employed many people and supported whole communities. Now, there are only about four left. Kiasos said kaiki building is an art, but the work is tough and tiring. He said young people are not following the profession. He tried to get his 23-year-old son to learn, but his son hopes to become a boat captain instead.
Kostas Damianidis is an architect with a PhD in Greek traditional boat building. He said there are many reasons for the fast decrease of traditional boat builders in Greece. He said, "It is a traditional craft which is slowly dying, and yet it's treated as if it were a simple manufacturing or supply business. There is no support from the state. On top of that, for years the European Union, of which Greece is a member, has supported destroying these boats as a way of reducing the country's fishing fleet." Damianidis questioned why a young person would want to learn the craft if the government is destroying the boats. Another major reason for the fast shrinking number of shipbuilders is the lack of any official learning process. Damianidis said, young people have to go learn beside the old craftsmen, often for 5 years, 6 years, for them to be able to make a small boat, a kaiki themselves. He added, there is no boat building school.
Damianidis is setting up a new museum of Aegean boat building and maritime crafts on Samos. He hopes a traditional boat building school, which would be Greece's first, will open in the museum. That could also help the boat builders on Samos, who now work mainly alone due to a shortage of skilled assistants. It's important to have someone experienced, because if you make one mistake, the boat might end up being, well, more of a basin than a boat, Kiasos said, laughing. After working for more than 30 years, Kiasos has learned the right time to cut down a tree, when to use naturally curved wood, and where on the boat each piece should go. He explained, if you get that wrong, the boat could end up with problems. Get it right, and his creation combines beauty, strength, and purpose. Kiasos says he is ready to finish each boat and start on the next. But when it leaves, I'm somehow sad. Yes, I'll be happy when I see it in the water and I see everything is okay, but it's like something is leaving, like a piece of me.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Toshi in Japan. Here is the question. Hi, how do native English speakers distinguish between can touch and can't touch? They sound the same for me. Also, can tell and can't tell, can take and can't take, and so on. Thank you. Hi, Toshi. Hearing the difference between the positive can and the negative can't is sometimes tricky, even for native English speakers. But understanding these things can help. The difference in vowel sounds, word stress differences, and the ending sound in can't. Let's talk about the differences in vowel sounds and word stress together, since they are connected. Here are the sentence examples we will use. I can take you to the place today. I can't take you to the place today. In the positive phrase, can take, the usual a in can is reduced to something called a schwa. The schwa sound is similar to an a sound, but weaker. But in the negative phrase, can't take, the word can't uses the true a vowel sound. In can't, the vowel sound is never reduced. This difference in sound is also connected to word stress, how loud and long we say each word in a phrase or sentence. In can take, the word take should be said a little louder and longer than can. However, in can't take, the word can't should be said a little louder and longer than take. Listen for the vowel and stress differences again in the two phrases. Can take, can't take. Another way to tell the negative and positive forms apart is through something called a glottal stop. It is a quick stop sound that happens when you close the vocal cords to briefly end the flow of air. In American English, we use a glottal stop for many sounds, including the ending T in the shortened words can't, won't, and don't. Now listen to the examples again and see if you notice all of the differences more easily. I can take you to the place today. I can't take you to the place today. At home, you can also try saying these sentences aloud. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Alice Bryant.
The Blue Hotel, Part 2.
I think you are tongue-tied,
says Scully finally to his son, the cowboy, and the Easterner. And at the end of this sentence, he left the room. Upstairs, the Swede was closing his bag. His back was half turned towards the door. And hearing a noise there, he turned and jumped up, uttering a loud cry. Scully's face was frightening in the light of the small lamp he carried. This yellow shine, streaming upward, left his eyes in deep shadows. He looked like a murderer.
Man, man,
exclaimed Scully.
Have you gone mad? Oh no, oh no,
answered the other.
There are people in this world who know nearly as much as you do, understand?
For a moment, they stood gazing at each other. Then Scully placed the light on the table and sat himself on the edge of the bed. He spoke slowly.
I never heard of such a thing in my life. It's a complete mystery. I can't think how you ever got this idea into your head.
Then Scully lifted his eyes and asked,
And did you really think they were going to kill you?
The Swede looked at the old man as if he wished to see into his mind.
I did,
he said at last. He apparently thought that this answer might cause an attack. As he worked on his bag, his whole arm shook, the elbow trembling like a bit of paper. Having finished with his bag, the Swede straightened himself.
Mr. Scully,
he said with sudden courage,
how much do I owe you?
You don't owe me anything,
said the old man angrily.
Yes, I do,
answered the Swede. He took some money from his pocket and held it out to Scully, but the latter moved his hand away in firm refusal.
I won't take your money,
said Scully.
Not after what's been happening here.
Then a plan seemed to come to him.
Here,
he cried, picking up his lamp and moving towards the door.
Here. Come with me a minute.
No,
said the Swede in great alarm.
Yes,
urged the old man.
Come on, I want you to come just across the hall, in my room.
The Swede must have decided that the hour of his death had come. His mouth dropped open, and his teeth showed like a dead man's. He at last followed Scully across the hall, but he had the step of one hung in chains.
No,
said the old man. He dropped suddenly to the floor and put his head beneath the bed. The Swede could hear his dulled voice.
I'd keep it under my pillow if it weren't for that boy Johnny. Where is it now? I never put it twice in the same place. There. Now, come out.
Finally, he came out from under the bed, dragging with him an old coat.
I've got it,
he whispered. Still on the floor on his knees, he unrolled the coat and took from it a large yellow-brown whiskey bottle. His first act was to hold the bottle up to the light. Satisfied, apparently, that nobody had touched it, he pushed it with a generous movement toward the Swede. The weak-kneed Swede was about to eagerly grasp this element of strength, but he suddenly pulled his hand away and cast a look of terror upon Scully.
Drink,
said the old man in a friendly tone. He had risen to his feet and now stood facing the Swede. There was a silence. Then again, Scully said,
drink.
The Swede laughed wildly.
Ha ha ha!
He seized the bottle, put it to mouth, and as his lips curled foolishly around the opening and his throat worked, he kept his glance, burning with hate upon the old man's face. After the departure of Scully, the three men, still at the table, sat for a long moment in surprised silence. Then Johnny said,
that's the worst man I ever saw.
Oh, I don't know,
replied the Easterner.
Well, what do you think makes him act that way?
Asked the cowboy.
He's frightened.
The Easterner knocked his pipe against the stove.
He's frightened right out of his senses.
At what?
Asked Johnny and the cowboy together.
I don't know. But it seems to me this man has been reading cheap novels about the West, and he thinks he's in the middle of it, the shooting and killing and all.
But,
said the cowboy, deeply shocked,
this isn't a wild place. This is Nebraska.
Yes,
added Johnny.
And why doesn't he wait until he really gets out West?
The traveled Easterner laughed.
Things aren't bad even there. Not in these days, but he thinks he's right in the middle of hell.
Johnny and the cowboy thought for a long while.
It's strange,
remarked Johnny at last.
Yes,
said the cowboy.
This is a queer game. I hope we don't get a lot of snow, because then we'd have to have this man with us all the time. That wouldn't be any good.
Soon they heard a loud noise on the stairs, accompanied by jokes in the voice of old Scully, and laughter, evidently, from the Swede. The men around the stove stared in surprise at each other. The door swung open, and Scully and the Swede came into the room. Five chairs were now placed in a circle about the stove. The Swede began to talk, loudly and angrily. Johnny, the cowboy, and the Easterner remained silent while old Scully appeared to be eager and full of sympathy. Finally, the Swede announced that he wanted a drink of water. He moved in his chair and said that he would go and get some.
I'll get it for you,
said Scully at once.
No,
refused the Swede roughly.
I'll get it for myself.
He got up and walked with the manner of an owner into another part of the hotel. As soon as the Swede was out of the room, Scully jumped to his feet and whispered quickly to the others.
Upstairs, he thought I was trying to poison him.
This makes me sick,
said Johnny.
Why don't you throw him out in the snow?
He's all right now,
declared Scully.
He was from the east, and he thought this was a rough place. That's all. He's all right now.
The cowboy looked with admiration upon the Easterner.
You were right,
he said.
Well,
said Johnny to his father,
he may be all right now, but I don't understand it. Before, he was afraid, but now he's too brave.
Scully now spoke to his son.
What do I keep? What do I keep? What do I keep?
He demanded in a voice like thunder. He struck his knees sharply to indicate he himself was going to make reply, and that all should listen.
I keep a hotel,
he shouted.
A hotel, do you hear? A guest under my roof has special privileges. He is not to be threatened. Not one word shall he hear that would make him want to go away. There's no place in this town where they can say they took in a guest of mine because he was afraid to stay here.
He turned suddenly upon the cowboy and the Easterner.
Am I right?
Yes, Mr. Scully,
said the cowboy.
I think you're right.
Yes, Mr. Scully,
said the Easterner.
I think you're right.
At supper that evening, the Swede burned with energy. He sometimes seemed on the point of bursting into loud song, and in all of his madness, he was encouraged by old Scully. The Easterner was quiet. The cowboy sat in wide-mouthed wonder, forgetting to eat, while Johnny angrily finished great plates of food. The daughters of the house, when they were obliged to bring more bread, approached as carefully as rabbits. Having succeeded in their purpose, they hurried away with poorly hidden fear. The Swede controlled the whole feast, and he gave it the appearance of a cruel affair. He seemed to have grown suddenly taller. He gazed bitterly into every face. His voice rang through the room. After supper, as the men went toward the other room, the Swede hit Scully hard on the shoulder.
Well, old boy, that was a good meal.
Johnny looked hopefully at his father. He knew that the old man's shoulder was still painful from an old hurt. And indeed, it appeared for a moment as if Scully were going to flame out in anger about it. But Scully only smiled a sickly smile and remained silent. The others understood that he was admitting his responsibility for the Swede's new attitude. When they were gathered about the stove, the Swede insisted on another game of cards. In his voice, there was always a great threat. The cowboy and the Easterner both agreed without interest to play. Scully said that he would soon have to go to meet the evening train, and so the Swede turned to Johnny. For a moment, their glances crossed like swords, and then Johnny smiled and said,
Yes, I'll play.
They formed a square around the table. The Easterner and the Swede again played together. As the game continued, it was noticeable that the cowboy was not playing as noisily as before. Scully left to meet the train. In spite of his care, an icy wind blew into the room as he opened the door. It scattered the cards and froze the players. The Swede cursed frightfully. When Scully returned, his icy entrance interrupted a comfortable and friendly scene. The Swede cursed again, but soon they were once more giving attention to their game, their heads bent forward and their hands moving fast. Scully took up a newspaper and as he slowly turned from page to page, it made a comfortable sound. Then suddenly, he heard three awful words.
You are cheating!
The little room was now filled with terror. After the three words, the first sound in the room was made by Scully's paper as it fell forgotten to his feet. His eyeglasses had fallen from his nose, but by a grasp, he had caught them. He stared at the card players. Probably the silence was only an instant long. Then, if the floor had been suddenly pulled out from under the men, they could not have moved more quickly. The five had thrown themselves at a single point. Johnny, as he rose to throw himself upon the Swede, almost fell. The loss of the moment allowed time for the arrival of Scully. It also gave the cowboy time to give the Swede a good push, which sent him backwards. The men found voices together, and shouts of anger, appeal, or fear burst from every throat. The cowboy pushed and pulled feverishly at the Swede, and the Easterner and Scully held wildly to Johnny. But through the smoky air, above the straining bodies of the peace compellers, the eyes of the enemies steadily warned each other. Scully's voice was loudest.
Stop now! Stop, I say! Stop now!
Johnny, as he struggled to break away from Scully and the Easterner, was crying.
Well, he says I cheated. He says I cheated. I won't allow any man to say I cheated. If he says I cheated him, he's a...
The cowboy was telling the Swede.
Stop now, do you hear?
The screams of the Swede never ceased.
He did cheat. I saw him. I saw him.
As for the Easterner, he was begging in a voice that was not heard.
Wait a moment, can't you? Oh, wait a moment. What's the use of fighting over a game of cards? Wait a moment.
In this noisy quarrel, no complete sentence was clear.
Cheat.
Stop.
He says...
These pieces cut the screaming and rang out sharply. It was remarkable that Scully, who undoubtedly made the most noise, was the least heard. Then suddenly there was a great stillness. It was as if each man had paused for breath. Although the room still filled with the anger of men, it could be seen there was no danger of immediate fighting. At once, Johnny pushed forward.
Why did you say I cheated? Why did you say I cheated? I don't cheat, and I won't let any man say I do.
The Swede said,
I saw you! I saw you!
Well,
cried Johnny,
I'll fight any man who says I cheat.
No, you won't,
said the cowboy.
Not here.
Johnny spoke to the Swede again.
Did you say I cheated?
The Swede showed his teeth.
Yes.
Then,
said Johnny,
we must fight.
Yes, fight!
Roared the Swede. He was like a mad devil.
Yes, fight! I'll show you what kind of a man I am. I'll show you who you want to fight. Maybe you think I can't fight. Maybe you think I can't. I'll show you, you criminal. Yes, you cheated. You cheated! You cheated!
Well, let's start then, fella,
said Johnny coolly. The cowboy turned in despair to Scully.
What are you going to do now?
A change had come over the old man. He now seemed all eagerness. His eyes glowed.
We'll let them fight,
he answered bravely.
I can't watch this any longer. I've endured this cursed Swede till I'm sick. We'll let them fight.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.